Hey everyone, it's Nellie Thomas here. How are you doing? This is Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. We hope you're loving the podcast as much as we are. A few quick things before we get into the show. For information about our fabulous live shows, which we do semi-regularly, go to nelliethomas.com and follow the links. We've just done a few in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and we'll be back for more early next year in 2024. Now, your listener calls are the backbone of this podcast. They're the best. Chuck out the rest. Take a chance. Send me in your question, your comment, your dating story, regret, anything really. We absolutely love hearing from you, and you can remain anonymous. Follow the links on my website or see the show notes for more information. To support the podcast and keep it coming out for free, please rate it on whatever app you're on now. Just pull it out. Hopefully give it a 5-star rating. That helps other people find it. Tell your mates, share it on socials, do all that stuff. If you can, please join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month and you get a bonus episode every month and some other perks. If you can't, that's also fine. Just keep listening every week for free. We can't do this without yous. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Maribyrnong in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Last but not least, if you're new to the podcast, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. Let me put it this way. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shits. So off you fuck.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nellie, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nellie, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nellie, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nellie, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start again. Dear Nellie, won't you hear my request? Dear Nellie, with your fabulous guest.
Let's get going.
Let's do it.
To Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And we are joined today by a very special guest by the name of Renee Thompson. Hello, Renee.
Hello. It's kind of unusual hearing myself be called Renee Thompson because I haven't really used my real name very much in these kind of things up until recently.
Would you rather Renee the Celebrant?
Oh, no, Renee Thompson's good. It's actually my name, so we're good.
Yeah. Now, beautiful Renee, I am going to, because I think it is probably one of our mutual favourite stories, let you tell the story of how we met.
I was hoping we'd be able to touch on this because it is a good one.
It's so we cute.
Were at Chill Out Festival 2023, yeah. And me and my crew had come up to Daylesford to throw a tomboy in the bush, right?
Yes.
All very exciting to bring all the queers to the country and meet the country queers. We took ourselves out for a real fancy meal in Hepburn Springs one night and couldn't find the shuttle bus to get home. We had a few edibles and also quite a few cocktails and wines, feeling very fancy. So we're like, we'll just walk back to Daylesford.
Yeah, on the side of the road.
Literally. On the side of the road. Yeah. There was no footpath. Next minute, this mum wagon pulls up, like full van. And we're like, who's this? And the Mormons arrived. And who was it but Dear Nellie?
Yeah.
To which point they're like, are you tomboy? And it made us feel very famous.
Yeah.
And so then you offered us a lift. We all jumped in. And my very mouthy drunk twin brother kept making jokes about, why don't you come to Tomboy and lock your kids up in the night? And yeah, I think that he also thought that your partner was your child. It was all inappropriate.
Oh, and block that bit out.
Yeah.
I remember. And I remember him, or possibly someone else, just starting to do that full, once we packed you all into the car, the full, Mom, can we have a drink?
That would have been Mark.
So for listeners, I am not accustomed to picking up hitchhikers, but if you haven't been to the Chill Out Festival, it is indeed very chilled out and a very safe and sort of lovely space. And I thought, why not? Like, these guys need a lift, jump in the car, and we became friends from there.
Yeah, it was real special, and thank you for getting us home safe that night.
You're most welcome. And so let me – actually, I'm going to let you do it. You are multifaceted in terms of your work. You have a normal job. I also know you through running the Tomboy events. Can you give us a little explanation of Tomboy?
Yeah, so I got all my fingers in all the pies just where I like them.
Stop it.
Is it hot in here?
Yeah.
So Tomboy actually was born out of pretty selfish reasons. I was single and I didn't really want to use apps, not in a judgmental way, just I didn't like the way that they made me feel. I didn't like the way that they made me feel like I was being judgmental of others based on a photograph and some words when for me, humans are so much more than that. Yes. They're a four-day experience. So yeah. I had been working in the event space at the time. I knew a lot of people and I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to produce an event that fits all of the things that I'm looking for in an event. Yeah. And some of those things were a space where you can sit and chat, smoke ciggies, because a lot of our community smokes. But then having a space where people can dance and get a little bit freaky if they want to, choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Yeah.
But also something that was in the city that was central to everyone. No more of this north side, south side bullshit.
Yeah.
Just like community, creative, artistic, left of center queers. And so that was 6 years ago and still going strong and always keeping it mostly free when we have events. The only ones we ticket are the Tomboy After Dark events, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit.
Yes. And, you know, I love two things about this. One is that when you see a need that you have yourself and cannot find it, that you go, all right, I'm doing that then. Right. So, I mean, it's a completely different space, but the same vibe. That's how I started writing children's books, because I could not find books that I thought reflected my kids and that I wanted them to read. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I better do that. Like, I love that kind of, I can't bear passivity in the face of difficulty. Do you know what I mean? It's like, who else is going to do it?
Right. And I also didn't want to just bitch about the fact that I didn't like the things that already existed, because just because it's not for me doesn't mean that it's not for somebody else.
Yes.
So I wanted to do something that didn't compete with the other events that were on, that actually just offered something different. And also something that was for all ages, right?
Yes.
Like literally all ages, not just this is a nightclub where 20-something-year-olds go, I don't like nightclubs. I ain't going to put an event on in a nightclub. It's just not mine. My vibe, same.
And I think the other thing I really love about Tomboy, I mean, it's full of weirdos, which is completely my vibe, but also that inclusivity is not it's not a token gesture. There are all ages, there are all sexualities, there are all gender expressions, there are different like types of, there's neurodiverse people, there's people with disabilities, there's like, there's such a range of people coming together, rather than going, well, this is a lesbian event over here, or this is a straight dating event, or the much like hopefully this podcast. It's like, everyone come on.
Yeah, lots of my straight friends come to Tomboy too. Like, that's the thing, because especially for straight girls, they don't have opportunity to be in a sexually liberated space like that without being preyed upon.
Yes.
So like, a lot of my straight friends or people who are questioning or intrigued. Yeah. Like, it's not the sort of place that we're going to turn you around at the door if you don't fit in some sort of identity. And the whole idea of a lesbian event's kind of outdated now. Like, so many people who once identified as lesbians are now non-binary or trans, and they're still attracted to the same kind of people. So why shouldn't they be able to come and enjoy this? And my mouthy twin brother, who is a cis gay man, he, my other best mate, they come along to Tomboy every month and they have a lovely time.
Yeah. Like you said, you can just go and have a chat. You can also pick up if that's what you want. You can go on the dance floor if that's what you want. And having that available in a space where, like, consent is so prominent, actually, I think lets people really properly relax. So even though you're walking into a quite charged environment, like a quite sexualized environment in a positive sense, in that it's okay to express your sexuality, but it's also a very low pressure environment, which is the sweet spot, I think.
I'm so glad to hear
well
that.
Done to you.
Thank you.
Well done. Now, can you take me back to little Renee? Little Renee, how old are you now? Because you look like 30.
Yeah, I'm about to turn 39, so I'm almost hitting your demographic.
Yeah.
Although they say you're only as old as the woman you feel, and my girlfriend's 42, so.
I was going to say, you don't mind a bit of a MILF action there, young Renee, so we'll let you in.
Cougars are my jam.
Yeah, so you're close to 40, close enough.
Yeah.
If you take me back to teenage Renee, were you dating? What was going on?
Yeah, so I grew up in country Northern Ireland as a teenager. So my life consisted of playing in pipe bands. I was a competitive drummer in pipe bands for most
Amazing.
Of my childhood. And with that came, I guess, my social life and community. There wasn't much else to do over there. It was either that or get drunk. And church. I was brought up in church. My parents are both born again Christians. So we were very conservative in me.
Wow.
Yeah. And so people ask me why I'm so kinky today. And I think a lot of that has been born out of that conservative upbringing.
Oh, no shit, mate.
I used to masturbate a lot whenever I was a kid. Like, it was wild. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I didn't know what it meant, but I knew that it felt good and I liked to do it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I remember at uni, so I come from a similar background, but in WA. And I remember friends of mine who were like really the first progressive kind of parents that I met, who were really open-minded and, you know, not hippies, but very progressive kind of vibes. And of course, one of their kids became a born-again Christian. You know, it's like the opposite of what you've done. I'm just like, no, mum and dad, no, I'm doing something different. He then, you know, went down another path, but I think it's a really interesting trajectory.
Yeah, with conservative upbringings, usually you go the other way and vice versa. Some of my most woke friends, their kids are so like vanilla.
Yeah, totally. Whereas I think the last time I saw you, you may have been dressed as a nun.
Yeah. Hence where those kinks come from, you know. Well, I suppose the Catholic thing was never my upbringing, but definitely the religion and the kind of, I have a tattoo on my chest that's an upside down crucifix, and it's got under my tits the three vows that nuns take. Can you guess what they are?
Fidelity.
Close.
No, you're going to have to tell me.
Chastity. Hot, right? That's so hot. Poverty.
Right.
And obedience.
Hey!
So I just thought that that was so hot. And I used to do performances under my alter ego sister, Eileen Ulick, her name is.
Yeah.
And I said that they branded me after trying to run away from the convent.
Oh, fantastic. So your little teenage Renee, you're in a conservative household, conservative town. You're masturbating. Do you know you're masturbating?
I didn't really understand what was happening, and we didn't really have the internet back then to Google everything after, you know.
On the job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I suppose I've always been really in tune with myself and how I feel, so I didn't. And guilt and shame was always such a big part of a conservative upbringing. So I guess that was what kind of got me off more as well. It was like, I'm doing this and I'm not supposed to be kind of thing.
So you knew you weren't supposed to be?
I guess in church they would, talk about fornication.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You say that with such a cheeky smile.
You can't see this on the podcast.
I find it a really interesting idea, though, because for some kids in that environment, because sex and masturbation and bodies are not talked about at all, there's a kind of perverse logic where they don't know that what they're doing is quote unquote wrong, right? They find out later because no one's talking about anything. And then there's your other fire and brimstone where you're told from a very young age, all of the myths and your palms are going to be hairy and you're going to hell and all that sort of stuff. So it's interesting. I mean, it's hard to remember, I'm guessing, how conscious you were of sin, Renee.
Well, it was sin, wasn't it? Look, I was doing it from a very young age, from as old as I can remember, really, and doing it in secret. And I think that was the most fun part of it for me. But yeah, I don't know that I realized until I was probably a teenager that it was quote unquote wrong.
Yeah. Interesting. And so when did you start dating like human beings other than yourself?
I've always been into humans. Like I love people. I love connecting. I was very excited as a teenager to like kiss boys because that's what you do. And so I started kissing boys at around like 13, 14.
Yeah. At school? Like where are you finding these boys?
Yeah, at school. At school and sometimes at youth group.
Yeah.
You know, the old chestnut, like going down the back alley and like sticking your hand in each other's pants kind of thing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So I think I was always really curious by my own sexuality and other people. So I was compelled from a pretty young age to be a sexual person. It was very much drummed into me that no sex before marriage, like that was just a hell no. So whenever I did have opportunity to have sex, I was always quite afraid to have penetrative sex. So I was just really into doing lots of oral sex and things like that where I couldn't be found out or get pregnant or all those things that had been scared into me my whole childhood.
Isn't that incredible? I remember when I was doing sex ed shows with teenagers, I mean, I'll be very careful for privacy reasons, but long story short, there were multiple incidents where young women in particular would tell me situations that I would absolutely consider coercive, where they'd been coerced into anal sex on the basis that it wasn't actually sex and that it wasn't a sex. And the lack of, like, the layers of fucked upness in that, the idea that it's not sex, but also that this kid has been less vulnerable to coercion because they've never been educated about either consent or what sexual contact means.
Yeah. And anal sex is a full-on thing. It's a very full-on thing. And it's something that you need to understand and know how to do it right. And for young people, like, that could be quite traumatic.
Oh, 100% traumatic. And if you have been told sex is penis in vagina and it only happens in marriage, how would you know otherwise? You are so vulnerable to exploitation. That is the great irony of that lack of info.
Yeah.
So when you get into your 20s, say, do you start getting over the penetrative?
Oh, I got over it at about 17. But I think also that kind of abstinence is something that has fueled my sexual desire as well. Yeah. Like, I'm so turned on at not getting what I want now. Like, that has really turned me into, like, that's now one of my kinks. So I think, like, I don't regret any of it. But, you know, I always had boyfriends because I didn't really start dating women until I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was horny. I was so fucking horny. But eventually, when I did decide at 17 that I was going to let my boyfriend stick it in me, had a really small cock. Barely touched the sides of it.
Oh, my God. I just took a sip of coffee as you. I was not expecting when I decided to let my boyfriend stick it in me. And how did that go? Didn't touch the sides.
Didn't touch the sides. I just remember, like, he put a condom on and everything, God love him, and then it just was like, saggy on there, like it didn't even
touch. Oh, bless.
Poor bastard, I know.
You know what, though, again, in terms of the lack of information and how we don't talk about stuff, I remember having conversations with friends who would say, I think he put it in. I think we had sex. I'm not sure. Like, it blows my mind to think that we're in that vacuum. Yeah. How do you not know if you've had penetrative sex? But if you're in a vacuum of misinformation or no information, maybe.
Or if you're disconnected from your genitals as well, right?
Yes, if you're dissociating, all that kind of stuff. So that didn't go so well by the sounds of it. You graduate to...
It was all right. Yeah. And then I guess after I'd done that, then I was like, okay, I've gotten past the first one, you know, the virginity one, get that out of the way. And part of me just really wanted to get that out of the way.
Yes.
Then, you know, that was it. There was more dick ends than week ends, you know.
Are you still in your small town at this point?
Yeah. Very much.
So this is like an Irish shit's great situation. You're just working your way through the town.
Yeah. And, you know, playing in the pipe bands, I was working my way around all the boys in the bands. And, you know, there was very few women in the band. So that was pretty easy. I was getting a lot of attention.
Yeah. I bet.
Yeah. And so it wasn't until I moved out of the country town and into the city, into Belfast, that I started to even understand that I had attraction to other genders. It was actually one of my friends told me I was a lesbian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my mate Amy, God love her. Thank you, Amy. And so then that was when I started to, I was about 21, started to explore gay bars and the queer scene and women in general. And that was an interesting time. I was quite frightened and I didn't really know how to go about picking people up, meeting people. I'm not an instigator in those situations. I think we've talked about this before. Like being an instigator, a lot of people, when you have a big personality, expect that you're going to be the one that is the instigator. And I was new. I just wasn't ready yet. So I think that I felt like it was easier to pick up guys than it was to pick up girls in the beginning. So yeah, it took me a little while to find my flow. I definitely had lots of good friends that I fell in love with who were definitely not that queer themselves. But I think we all have those experiences in the early days too. So it took me a little while to find my feet, but once I found my flow, I was very much the scene queen in Belfast, as you
can. Yes, I can.
But then I did the whole, well, I'm a lesbian now thing. And so that was my identity for quite a while, maybe another 10 or 15 years before I had to come back out again as bi or multi-gender attracted.
And how did that happen?
Well, every few years between relationships, I would have what I called Mr. Haps. I would, you know, get drunk, be out, get a guy pick me up, have a lovely time, and then be like, oh shit, I had another Mr. Hap, whoops. I'll go back to being a leso again. And it wasn't until I was working in a queer organization where I was just witnessing how much biphobia there was around that I realized that I had to start being more vocal about my identity for the sake of the bi community.
100%. Like, you and I've had these discussions before. I don't like the labels, but I'm do the same thing for the same reason, because I know how many people who are bisexual, pansexual, queer, whatever categories that people don't understand, are quite frankly suffering, you know, and often really isolated and full of shame from both communities. And like, enough of that shit. Like, we're not having it.
Agreed. And that was a big thing at Tomboy that I wanted to ensure was if there was ever any biphobia going on in the space, that we nipped it in the bud there and then. Because so many of the people that come to Tomboy are in relationships that might appear to be heterosexual on the outside. And this is their only opportunity to find community. And I want them to know that that's their community too, because I think there's like ridiculous stats around how many bisexual people there are, like, and so many of them are invisible.
Oh, I mean, every study of sexuality since Kinsey in what, the 50s has shown that in terms of attraction and even behavior, it's the vast majority of people. Whether they identify as such is different, but it's commonly uncommon to be bisexual, you know, in whatever way. So do you prefer, like, is there a label I should use with you? Do you prefer bi, do you prefer pan, do you prefer nothing? Renee?
I really don't mind. I identify as horny. Look, I just think humans are hot. I have joked in the past that I'm like a 70-30. I'm like 70% into women and 30% into men. That's actually just ridiculous. I think that for me, the utopia is just no more labels, human to human, if you think someone's hot. Because look at the way we're going. Everybody's genderless looking now anyway, right? So, and even I experience my gender in different ways from day to day. One day I'll be femme, the next day I'll be a tomboy. So I just think that we restrict ourselves with these labels at times too. But I completely understand why they're important still, but that's where I'm at with them.
Yeah, in terms of utopia, I'm exactly the same. They're necessary for activism. They're fucked for humans is the way that I would put it. So flash forward, you're now in a relationship that's quite long term.
Yeah, it's the real deal.
Tell me.
Yeah. It happened when I least expected it.
As usual.
Yeah. We were both at a mutual friend's very queer wedding. And I was not the celebrant at this one. I'd actually taken another girl to the wedding with me. And everybody at the wedding was flirting. Like, it was a queer wedding. Yeah. Everybody was flirting. Everybody was hot. It was very much like queer dancer, burlesque type people. Yeah. So it was a really fun time. And then the same friend had a birthday party and we were both at the birthday party together. Yeah. It was back when Honcho Disco was at the 86 on Thursday nights.
Oh, fun.
And I was dancing around. I was dressed like Lara Croft out of Tomb Raider.
Oh, gorgeous. Angelina.
And I was dancing around with my tits out. And she came up to me and said, can you undo the zip on the back of my dress for me, please? And I said, oh, okay. Why? She goes, because I want to get my tits out too.
Hey. Oh, that's a line.
Yeah. And she's got cracking tits. So that pretty much sealed the deal.
Right, we're getting married.
no marriage. We're not, neither of us are married people. Doesn't make me a shit celebrant if I'm not married.
No, it doesn't. We'll come back to that. But so did she instigate then? You didn't have to be the instigator this one time.
No, and that was probably the hottest thing ever. Like, femme tops, give me those femme tops. I'm here.
Now explain for listeners. Obviously, I know what a femme top is, obviously, but what is a femme top?
I think the thing that helped me to understand my sexuality more was understanding the terms top and bottom.
Yeah.
And in the gay guy community, they're really literate with this, and they use the term top and bottom to understand who's the instigator and who's the receiver, essentially. Yeah. In sexual terms, you can kind of get the picture, right?
Yeah.
Who's on top and who's on the bottom.
Yeah.
But we can actually apply that to our relationships too. And I think that when you do, it helps you to understand kind of the role that you play in that sort of instigation piece. Mm. So what I didn't realize until pretty much when I met her was actually I really like femme tops and they're as rare as hen's teeth.
So femme top though, you mean like femme is the
I'm really into femme women. I'm really attracted to femme women.
And this is literally as it sounds, like women who look stereotypically feminine.
More feminine, yeah.
Yeah. But by top, that, you mean with a bit of BDE.
Yeah, likes to big dick energy all the way.
Correct.
Likes to instigate, likes to take control. But you know, I say that in a way that it's versatile too, but default, big dick energy, big clip.
And look, you and I've discussed this as well. I'm the same. Like when I'm asked, I'm like, I love a hot butch, but it's not like exclusive. You know, like there's a whole range of humans that I can find attractive, but there's something about that, I don't know, maybe it's an early 90s aesthetic that I'm yearning for.
But there was something really rebellious at that time looking like that.
Correct.
Because, you know, butch women did not have an easy time back then.
No.
I ride with Dykes on Bikes, and I've always had a lot of respect for the Dykes on Bikes and the work that they did back when the AIDS epidemic was at its peak. They were riding around the beats and keeping gay men safe because of their butch identities, you know? And I think, like, it was confronting for people seeing women hyper-masculine back then.
And I think to some extent still is. Like it just depends what circles you're running in.
Yeah.
But that part of that, I mean, one of the most lovely callers we had, I had said casually in a joking way that I loved a hot butch and on the podcast, and she rang and she, it was really moving. She was like, in the community that she's in, she doesn't feel like valued or like she's attractive. And this is in a queer community. And she's like, just to hear someone say that in the positive was actually really affirming, because we forget not everyone's living in bubbles of acceptance. You know, it's not easy to walk through the world not gender conforming.
Yeah.
I mean, well, for me, that's hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so many of my friends our age who are still butch like love to be called daddy, and I'm so here for it. Like that whole reclaiming of that, like fuck you.
Yeah. So you like the, correct me if I'm wrong, but you like the power play in that.
Yeah,
and expand, can you expand on that? Because I think this will be a new concept for some listeners.
Yeah. So the whole idea of mom and dad, well, that's your parents, right? They're the people that made you. But mommy and daddy, well, there's something about that, because for queer people, I think what we're doing is repairing in a kink way some of those negative relationships we may have had with our parents of origin. So like shifting some of that stuff around and turning it into play helps you to process a lot of it as well. And so some of my early experiences of kink were with someone who did mummy role play. And some people are really confronted by that. But I think when it's consensual and everybody's getting something out of it, well, then why not?
It's a role. I think that's the thing that needs to be made clear. It is not about, it's not pedophilic.
Yeah.
That's the concern. It is two consenting adults playing with the idea. No different, I think, than, I don't know, nurse play.
It's about nurturance and caregiving, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I always like to say I'm a social top and a sexual bottom.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time being a social top. So whenever I'm in the confines of my safe spaces, well, I want to be cared for and nurtured. And that kind of like dominant mommy caring role play really feeds into that.
Now, I'm dying to ask you, and you share as much or as little as you want, but you are in an open relationship.
Yeah, it's hard to put a label on what we have.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Because it's, I would say, non-monogamous rather than open.
Oh, what's the difference?
Well, that language just feels better for me. I don't think there's much difference. I think it's just what feels better. So open, I guess, feels like it's more no hierarchy for me. Mm-hmm. But non-monogamous makes me feel like, hey, whenever we need to, we have the freedom and the space to be with other people.
Yeah, okay. So the open thing implies kind of open slather, and that your partner's not number one.
Yeah, that's what it feels like for me. But everybody has their own relationship.
Has their own thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And are you comfortable explaining how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. When we first met, both of us had multiple partners, and we always kept that conversation open from the beginning. And in my last serious relationship was when I realized that I wasn't monogamous, but I didn't want to be a cheater. And so that relationship ended up breaking down based on that. Mm. And that was around the time that I realized I wanted to explore kink and fetish as well. So it was my Saturn return, doll. It was a big it was a big time of shift in my life. I'd experienced a really huge loss in my family, and it was just a big time of like, what's important to me? Am I being the truest version of myself that I really want to be? What about these dirty little secrets that I have in the back of my head that are just not letting me fully be present? And so I had to have some really difficult conversations with my partner at the time. And she was actually really open to letting me have a go at exploring kink and everything and seeing how that felt for both of us. In the end, it didn't work. So I was starting any relationship beyond that with that still in my head. I need to be sure that from the beginning, I'm honest with any partner that I'm with that I'm not a monogamous person, and then negotiate what that looks like. So my current partner, she's also bi, which meant she's very much known that she's always going to have needs as well. And I did listen to a previous podcast when you were talking about lesbians dating bi people and worrying that they'd want to run away with someone else. Everybody's different. In both of our circumstances, both of us do feel the need sometimes to have some D.
And that's something, you know, if you know that, like the part that I object to is the assumption that will be needed.
It's always a conversation. It should always be a conversation. And so we were both really honest and open from the get-go about that. And, you know, as I said, we both have multiple people on the go. So it was pretty obvious that that's how things were beginning. But then we had a global pandemic and we were forced into monogamy again based on the fact that we couldn't really see other people. So we've kind of had to renegotiate what that looks like coming back out of lockdowns. And some of those rules are a bit different from what they were in the beginning, based on the fact that we've been together much longer now. We're both really busy. And you know, we're much more in love than we were when we first negotiated all of those things. So we have to be caring for each other in the way that we do these things as well. So now it kind of looks like party pashes at Tomboy. Go for your life, have fun. We're always really happy for each other to have a good time.
And have the flirtation, have a bit of physicality. There's limits to it.
And often that feels like enough. But sometimes we'll play with other people together. And that also feels really fun and also not something that feels as difficult for the other person that's not participating. But we're really in a place right now where we're keeping that conversation open as we feel. And so we both know that the options are there if and when we need them. And as I said, sometimes that just feels enough.
That's sometimes just having the choice, right? And I mean, I say this like weirdly from a parenting perspective. Give the kids as many choices as you can. The minute someone feels controlled, they will buck against that control. Like that is almost human nature. So having the permission to have that conversation. The other thing I love about it is, you know, you started, I think, the explanation by saying, like, I didn't want to be a cheater. To me, this whole concept is far more ethical than the behavior of most people who are talking about it in the negative. People like, oh, open relationship, you know, they're all fucking around and they're, you know, very pejorative kind of discussion. And then you look at the stats and you're like, well, someone's fucking around, but it's not the people in open relationships or in non-monogamous relationships. It is people cheating.
And it's easy to cheat. You know, that's the thing. It's not easy to negotiate all of these things. We do monthly check-ins with full agendas, like it's lesbian as fuck.
You have an agenda?
Yeah.
It's
a resource that I got off the Multiamory podcast. And
amazing.
A radar, R-A-D-A-R. And that's an acronym. And what it does is you review the last month or the last period between check-ins. And then you go through the agenda, which covers things like health, dating, sex, the house, all of those things, other partners. And then at the end, you reconnect, whether that's a date, sex, massage, intimacy, whatever. And honestly, I recommend it to everyone. I'll send
that's
you a link.
Right. Please.
I've recommended it to so many people and everyone that started doing it is like, wow, this is a game changer. But you have to do it when things are good, not just when things are bad.
No, exactly. I'll put a link in the show notes. I love the intentionality of it. Now, I want to, we've gone way over time, but I don't care. I want to know, because you're a wedding celebrant, right? Yeah. Which I find like just the deliciousness of this. I mean, I met you in the context of like, oh, that's that chick who organizes those kink events. I love the idea of like a kinkster also being a wedding celebrant, which is a very traditional. I mean, not that your weddings are traditional.
Not my weddings.
You know, like the traditional concept. So what is it that draws you to celebrancy, given you don't want to get married and you're a horny bitch?
Yeah. One of my mates called me the patron saint of pleasure. And I was like, yeah. I like that.
That's nice.
They all feed into each other, really, you know, connection, human connection, and whether that's love or sex or dating, it's all linked. And I've always loved love and people and pleasure. And I think being able to hold space for people on their most important day is really special. But I got into it based on the fact that I was pretty heavily into the marriage equality campaign when that was happening 6 years ago. And I thought to myself, this has been really fucked for our community, but how good would it be to be part of the joy that we then experience marrying queer people to each other and bringing queer chosen family together and dissecting marriage and distilling it into something that actually resonates for us as a community. So it's, I feel like I've been really part of something quite special in the way that we've kind of set the tone with queer weddings to a point where I'm now watching straight weddings start to like emanate some of the stuff.
Oh yeah.
And queers have always led the way with style and trend anyway. But
absolutely.
In a love space, I think it's really fucking cool.
I think it's lovely. And it reminds me, you know, when you said before that sort of reclaiming, like for me, it's reclaiming the word queer. Like I've been into the queer theory thing, you know, for decades. And I see that as a really powerful reclaiming for you, like even the something like Hello Daddy. And this is another version of that, right?
Yeah. And for same-sex attracted people, there is no patriarchy. So I think that's the other thing we have to remember too. Like we're kind of like old staunch feminists, like, oh no, marriage is not for me. And that's not why I don't want to get married, but I can understand why women of our age are like anti-marriage, you know? But when people experience a queer wedding, they're just like, holy fucking shit, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced.
It's
and
gorgeous.
To be able to stand there and say marriage is the union of two people instead of a man and a woman, this is such a powerful thing to do and say. And I think our community really deserve to experience that joy and affirmation that they haven't had to, haven't been able to in the past.
All right, I am going to move us on. Would you like to do a listener call?
Absolutely, let's do it.
Hi, Nelly. My name is Nat. Firstly, I just want to say an incredibly deep thank you to you for your bravery, your courage, and your honesty. Your podcast has literally saved me. I have just come out of a 28-year marriage. 5 years, last 5 years with a child with addiction, and it took its toll and we didn't survive. Your podcast listened at 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning is literally what kept me going in my darkest moments. It's for that reason I'm recording this and I want to give back to you and the community of your podcast. I decided to get back out there and go online dating. And that was very much due to how much, you know, you said, get back out there. And I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And I had literally shut down sexually, felt numb, felt like my sex life was gone, over, never to return again, which was pretty upsetting for me because I'm a pretty, a woman with a really high libido. And a squirter. And I know you've already had things on squirters, so I feel free and easy to say that. So online dating, literally the first encounter was a man that really literally just wanted sex, although I said I want a relationship. And so I went for it, basically. And he started talking. I came on fire and bam, it was back on. And I kind of went on a flurry of cybersexing is probably the best way to say it. So this is, you know, I've been in a 28-year marriage, one person. So the first sort of person I came across was a dorm. Now let's just think 50 Shades of Grey here, ladies and gentlemen, because that's exactly what was going on. Pretty bloody exciting. And until I mentioned emotions, to which my first ghosting occurred, I was pretty gutted actually by that. So that was kind of like my first learning curve. I decided, okay, I'm going to take the best things away from this. And he introduced me to splash blankets, which as a squirter, I had no fucking idea this even existed. Completely changed my life sexually. Look them up if you're a squirter, even look them up if you're not, because they are fucking fantastic. So that was awesome. And I was kind of like, okay, fuck you. You ghosted me. I'm going to take the best. Then I went from there to a relationship with, I'm up in the high reaches of northern New South Wales, and started a relationship with a 65-year-old man who talked himself up so much about what he was going to do to me and all the rest of it. I did end up meeting him and booked an Airbnb. He had flown up from Melbourne to Brisbane, so it was a big deal. And the first sexual encounter, basically, he got off, rolled over, and went to sleep. Had to finish myself off. So I gave him that feedback. That didn't last long. So that was my first one. And then this is the one I've literally just come out of last night, which I really, really want listeners to hear. I have spent the last 4 weeks in a online relationship with a man who professed his deep love for me, and I ended up falling in love with him. And to find out last night, and only by my adult children being here and we're just probing and probing, that the whole entire thing was a scam. He was trying to get money out of me at this point. He actually didn't ask, but the situation was I was meant to meet him today up at the Gold Coast, and I think if he actually had turned up, he would have been putting it on me then and there. And it was basically he had said he was involved in a very high-profile job, the Chinese. He was bringing in materials. I'm telling you this so you know the scenario. He had to fork out of his own pocket for expenses he didn't know were there. I told me in the end that he was short $20,000, which meant he wouldn't be paid out for the contract.
Oh, and we cut out there. Okay. All right. So first of all, I love this bitch, right? I love it. What do you hear? Tell me everything. How are you responding?
My first point is if you don't use it, you lose it, right?
Yes.
Especially for women, but also for men, for everyone. Yeah. You don't use it, you lose it. And yeah. I think we've all been there in relationships where things have got a little bit stale and mundane. So I'm really glad to hear that she got back on the wagon.
Yes.
She was getting her needs met and actually started to know what it was that she was looking for.
Mm. Mm.
Point two. When she says she's a squirter, I beg to differ that anyone with a pussy can squirt.
Right.
The whole idea of saying someone is a squirter is actually only talking about the people who understand that they're squirting or have been made to squirt before.
Yeah.
But I guess we've been shamed into believing it's so gross and wrong that a lot of people don't engage in allowing themselves to squirt. I went into a deep dive a few years ago to understand it because I like to squirt, gush, make other people do that. And I was curious as to how it all works. So when you're about to squirt or gush, the sensation is very similar to urinating.
Yes. Which is
why often people are like, no, stop, because they feel like they need to pee.
Yeah.
It's actually coming from a different place and it's not urine. So when you allow yourself to push past that, that's actually whenever you squirt. Gosh. So for anyone listening at home, have a try. It's just mostly about G-spot stimulation and clitoral stimulation at the same time. Not milking the sponge. A little the G-spot, the spongy bit. So yes, when it comes to squirting, it's actually something that lots of people are capable of doing if they allow themselves to and feel comfortable in doing that.
Well, and how would you even, like, look at her situation? She's been in a monogamous, sounds like for at least part of it, sexless relationship for 28 years, let alone the fact that even if you're dating and progressive, people don't talk about squirting and flooding and blankets and all the rest of it. There's still taboos around this stuff and misinformation. So how would you even know to explore it?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm so proud of her for like raising it, you know, and raising it without any kind of shame or it felt like self-consciousness. She's just like, oh my God, I've discovered this. I assume she's probably similar age to me. I've discovered this new thing at this age. Like, amen, sister. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. And shame free, which is incredible.
Loved it. Just, you know, not apologizing for it. This is one of the big things that we try and talk about. Same when you're on the apps or whatever. Don't apologize for, oh, I have this difference, or I'm like, you are who you are. There's someone for you. There's probably multiple people for you.
Totally. And give it a go. It feels really good.
Yeah.
The catfishing thing though. Oh my God. Is this like really fucking common?
Yes, it is. Look, it is one of, I'm always in two minds because I think that there is a lot of, there's a lot of hangovers from just sex negativity and shaming that are in the discussion about online dating, that even if they're not specified or they're not explicit, it's really about going, oh, you're all just fucking around, aren't you? As opposed to, yeah, some people are just fucking around. Like, you could meet a guy at the pub who could do the same thing.
Yeah.
You could meet a woman at work who could do the same thing. I mean, you and I, me more so, are old enough to have been growing up in that era where you would pick up in a nightclub. You have no fucking idea who you're meeting.
Oh, totally.
So, yes, it's a platform for scammers, but it's not like they weren't doing that before, right? Of course, you've got to be, and it sounds like, I mean, obviously the call cut out, but it sounds like she was onto it, and that's the key.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Do not, let's be explicit, do not give someone money that you're dating.
No, unless you've been with them for a considerable length of time, you shouldn't be needing to lend someone that you're dating money. I'm sorry. No. Do you know what I thought? Someone having their finances sorted out.
Oh, Renee, I couldn't agree more. And that doesn't mean that they're wealthy.
No.
My friend Maria, she talked about going on a date. And she said, she's a quirky little thing. And she said to the guy, how much debt do you have? She's like, I don't care how much debt you have, but I want to know that you know how much debt that you have. And that was, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I've always remembered that. Yeah. It's not about your income. It's not about what you own. But if you are chaos with your finances, then that is going to impact me.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I agree. Love it. Spreadsheet, agenda. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I know I don't appear to be like having my shit together as this crazy little
I think you
boy,
do.
But I'm actually really fastidious about this stuff.
Yeah. No, I can
I come
see
from
that.
Nothing, you know, I come from absolutely nothing. And I said that would never be me. So I made sure that that was not me. And budgeting is a big part of that.
I'm the same. There's no safety net. I am the safety net. Right. Yeah. So I am bloody onto it. And it makes me, the thing I've noticed in dating, actually speaking, and it's relevant with the caller, I've noticed that I didn't even know at this age that if I am on a date with someone where I know that they are organized is not the right word, but you know, they've got their shit together.
Yeah.
That makes me free to be playful.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because if they're chaotic, I sort of go into mum mode.
Yeah.
Like I start to actually become the sort of school captain where I'm worried, you know, I'm worried for them. I'm worried for me. And then I'm not flirty and I'm not fun and I'm not the version of myself that I want to be on a date. It's
and
that
often,
baseline.
As women, we want to fix things for people.
Ah.
You huge red flags if there's any money questions involved. Nope.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and go and walk away. I mean, it's different if someone goes, for me it would be anyway, if they went, oh, you know, we're on a date, I'm a bit short this week, can you pay for dinner? Fine. That's a whole different thing. Can you lend me $500?
Not a $20,000 dinner.
$20,000 dinner. Can we go back to the fun part? Yeah. My God, for a start, what beautiful stuff she said about the podcast. Like it actually, I mean, it makes me, oh, I don't even know what it makes me, all the feels, you know, to imagine someone in that situation in the middle of the night, like drawing some comfort from this little project, you know, yeah. Like it's beautiful.
But that's what you offer. It's not just like that nurturing mum thing, but it's also shared experience and sharing your experience, which actually is quite similar probably to a lot of people who've never been able to speak about it or assess that. So that's wonderful. It's wonderful that she found you and that you could bring her comfort in those difficult times. It made me clutch my chest as I was.
I know.
Yeah, it's just beautiful.
It's so, because you know what it's like, any creative person, you put stuff out, you don't know what impact it's having, you don't know. So thank you for that feedback. And I just love, I know from my own experience and from our callers, it takes a lot of guts to start again. It takes a lot of gut, like it's really vulnerable and all your shit, all your wounds, everything comes up. So the fact that
some people
started,
never get past that, you know.
They don't. And I really admire that she's gone, you know what, I'm not done yet. Not done yet. Like I've there's something out, and look at her discovering a bloody dom and my sex drive is. How many times do you hear women say, oh, I don't even really care about sex?
Yeah.
And then they become single.
All of a sudden. Yeah. You don't use it, you lose it. That's right. You're
exactly right. What do you know? What was it called? Was it a flood blanket?
Oh, yeah, there's whole sorts of them. The Instagram ads are constantly telling me about these squirt blankets. I'm like,
I would love to see your algos.
Fuck it, yeah.
The best.
I don't actually have social media anymore, but whenever I did have social media, yeah, the algos knew me too well.
Oh, yeah, I no doubt. Now, I had a letter and a call, but I'm going to get you back on to do those because we've gone over time. All right, so we're going to end this episode. Firstly, will you come back on because I have more questions for you?
I have so much more to say, so yes, please.
I would love to have you back on. And, of course, that is the vulnerable position where you get to ask me a question, and I dread Renee in the driver's seat.
I used to have my own podcast as well, so I love this stuff. Are we not going to get to do our There
are
10 butt bits?
Oh, we 100% are going to add on no shade on my ex.
Okay,
so
cool.
You tell me something. It can be superficial, could be deep, stupid shit that an ex did. Go.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure that my first ever proper girlfriend was just with me to learn how to be gay.
Oh. Was she working it out?
Yeah. She dressed up as me for Halloween one year.
Oh, Renee.
It's kind of scary and heartwarming at the same time.
What did she wear?
Oh, I used to look pretty out there, like kind of a bit punky looking. And so she just had to recreate my look.
Oh, my Lord. Yeah. While you knew her?
Yeah, while we were together.
Oh, no. That's fucking creepy. Did that creep you out?
A little bit, but I was also so young. I just didn't really understand what was happening. Upon reflection, I'm like, that was a bit strange.
Wow. All right, I'll do you a deal. Next Halloween, I'll dress as you and you can dress as me and we'll go trick-or-treating and we'll reclaim that memory.
You're going to dress like a slutty teenager?
Yes, I am.
Cool. That's definitely aesthetic.
Now, there are 10 butts. So imagine, can you conjure up in your mind like a celebrity that if I said you can, or someone well known, you can go on a date with this person, who would it be?
Oh, God, you've hit me with a curveball with that one. I don't know, actually. I don't really see celebrities in the way that people see celebrities. I feel weird about the whole way that people put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
So I've never really had a celebrity crush.
Crush.
When I was young in Ireland and just like realizing I was into chicks, I had a pretty big crush on Pink. But I think a lot of lesbians did at that time. Oh, actually, you know what? It would probably be Annie DeFranco.
Oh my God.
Because I mean, that woman defined me as a bisexual, as a feminist, as a musician. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to blow your mind. She touched me on the shoulder once.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, ex-girlfriend, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, pretty much fingered you there in the end.
With her little plastic castle.
Stop it. Oh, that's incredible.
So you are on a, let's say you're on a date with Annie DeFranco and you're like beside yourself and this is great and there's good bants and there's flirts and the juices are flowing, but she does something where you go, oh, fuck this, I'm out. Like she's a 10, but I'm out of here. What is it?
Talks in a baby voice.
Oh, just, yes.
Just do not. You've just made my whole vagina close over.
Yeah. Yeah. Concreted.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me an example. You mean like ordering something from the waiter or?
But like talks to me in a baby voice, like that whole lovey-dovey baby. Mm-mm. No.
Hello, baby.
No, I don't even like I can't be called baby. Yeah. Just do
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm with you. Now, before we go, can you give your business a plug, please? Because there's no doubt people listening who are looking for a wonderful queerdo celebrant.
Yeah, reneethecelebrant.com.au. I don't discriminate. I marry all kinds of humans. You just got to be cool and creative and not like a micromanager.
Yeah, yeah.
Trust me to do my thing. I promise you'll have a wonderful time.
Yeah, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
There's a point with like I'm that like with my hairdresser, I'm like, but you know what you're doing. Like I'll give you a broad idea. Yeah. But I'm not gonna sit go cut here, do this, add that top. How the fuck do I know I'm not a hairdresser?
That's right.
Same with the celebrant, same for me when I'm emceeing events and people try and micromanage and you're like, why are you paying me?
Totally. You know? Well, I'm a triple threat, so I offer celebrant MC and DJ packages so people can
have
do the whole thing. I also do Dolly Parton drag as well, if anyone's into that.
Oh.
But I will probably roast you on your wedding day with consent, of course.
Yeah. I've never been married, but if I get married, you'll be the celebrant and I will roast you back.
Yeah, bring it on, doll.
Thank you so much, Renee. That was adorable.
Thank you for having me.
All right. See you, sweetheart.
Dear Nelly. I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nelly. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy creative production team, and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous!